Welcome to the AI Ireland podcast, your window into the world of AI innovation on the island of Ireland. Join us as we explore how AI is harnessed to tackle both business and societal challenges, revealing the cutting-edge solutions emerging from this vibrant AI community. Don't forget to subscribe for the latest updates and insights in the world of AI. Hello everyone, it is Mark Kelly, founder of AI Ireland. I hope you're doing really, really well wherever you are in the world today. Today I'm chatting with Kevin McGee. I've known Kevin, I'm probably close to about 6-7 years now. Kevin was being fantastic advice to me when I was actually setting up AI Ireland in terms of actually what we were going to do, our mission, and how we're actually going to add the most impact, and been a great sounding board over the years as well. Kevin has been working in the world of AI for a long time across a variety of different industries, which he's going to share in a bit more detail now. And most recently, he's working as a CTO of a company called Zeiss. Kevin, thanks very much for joining us on the show today.
No, it's great to be here, Mark. You know, I think it might be a few more years than 7 years, but yeah, we've been chatting for a long time, and I think you've been threatening to interview me for a while now, so we managed to get it together, today. So it's great to have this chat.
So just to give a little bit of context, Kevin, you've actually worn a lot of different hats, which are rather than being in particularly a certain industry or a particular role, you've kind of seen it from a few different angles, which I really like. Would you mind giving us a bit of a elevator pitch on some of the work that you've done in the past and some of the industries?
Yeah, sure. I've been in the tech industry for over 30 years now at this stage. I've been, primarily working on, kind of advanced tech and data throughout all that period. And, for probably over half of that time, I've been working in kind of the broader AI kind of ecosystem, whether it's, with the, AI as we describe it today, or, machine learning that we describe, in previous kind of incarnations. But yeah, I've worked across, a lot of high growth tech companies, so companies like, in the past, Let's Get Checked, healthcare company, SmartForce way back in the day, who were an e-learning company. And, at the moment, as you said, I'm CTO for Zeiss, all of those had data at the heart of them. But I also took, a few years where I spent some time working in some multinationals. So companies like Optum, who are part of United Health Group, again, the healthcare trend there as well, Dun & Bradstreet, Daiwa Securities, who are in financial services. And even many years ago, Capgemini, for my sins. So I've been involved in a lot of those. So I kind of got to see both the the high growth tech companies and the multinationals and what they're trying to do. I did spend a couple of years working. I was brought in by IDEA and Enterprise Ireland to help set up what was at the time called a data analytics technology center, which now we know as CEDAR. I helped them set that institute up, ran it for its first year, and we hired its director then at that stage, and I stepped aside. But it was a really great experience to kind of see it from the academic side, and doing kind of core academic research, and making it relevant to enterprises and organizations, and so that was good. And I did a number of years back, I spent some time as working in the venture capital industry as well. So kind of getting all of the different angles of experience and what it takes to really bring. For me, it's about bringing data products to market. It's bringing kind of AI products to market, and what it really, what you need to do that, and it's not the same as just building kind of your traditional, software only stack. There's a lot of other considerations, in particular, like things like the bar is much higher for a start, than in internal use cases, because you have to persuade somebody to buy this and, part with some money and so on. But you also have all the challenges of the data challenges, and, you've got a lot of the feedback loops and other things. And we can expand on that, as we go. A lot of experience there over many different kind of environments.
What I like, Kevin, which is unique, is you've wore all those different hats, and then you've actually... You've got a lot of empathy depending on which side of the fence that you're actually looking at or engaging on. But from the commercial perspective, getting an AI product to market, as you said, has got a variety of different hurdles.
Yeah.
Firstly, you need to get the AI product to market, which is step one. But then you need to have people buy the product, right? Because you have to entice these people to buy, understand their needs and worries and concerns, and making sure that the audience is plugged into it. And we've seen with generative AI, every company you can imagine is now called AI at the end of their product, right? Yeah. So it's more worrying or concerning for anyone making a purchase of these products in terms of what actually is AI, what if then rules, and you know, how does this impact our business? So if we kind of take it a step back, and you're looking to introduce a product to Marcus, and you've got a regular technology team that's very comfortable shipping software, what kind of considerations do you need to start to put into play, and how do you start to delve into, well, am I using AI just because I've been told to use AI, or what's the fundamental reason to even try to introduce this into the product?
Yeah, well, there is many scenarios where people are told, you know, we need to just put AI in for the sake of it. But I do think, you know, if I kind of put my product hat on for a bit, you have to build something that is useful to people, you know, and you have to solve a problem. And, you know, sometimes there is this, and we see it at the moment, there's a lot of people who are trying to be opportunistic. They'll look at something like, say, OpenAI and ChatGPT, and where are the gaps in it? What is it not doing? And they'll try and build a product that's trying to fill those gaps. But there's so many times where we see that, you know, that it's pretty obvious that OpenAI and other, you know, the Googles and, you know, the other organizations are going to add that capability into the roadmap at some point. So, you know, that product is not going to be, you know, a standalone useful, you know, in many cases. So you've got to always keep that in mind, that if you're just trying to be opportunistic, and we've seen this is nothing to do with just AI or generative AI. This is just in general. Like if you're building something that is, you know, trying to fill a gap of one of the majors, you know, there's a risk there because, you know, the major might put it into the roadmap at some point. And so you do have to think about, you know, what value are you adding? Why are you adding this? And, you know, and also, you know, like if you've no moat, you know, to protect yourself against, you know, the competition, you know, it's a very, very dangerous place. And, you know, and we sometimes see, you know, investors get overexcited about these things, and they'll put a lot of money into companies that are really filling in a gap. And then suddenly, you know, Microsoft or, as I said, Google or OpenAI or somebody just adds it to the roadmap. And of course, if I'm a buyer of technology, I'm more inclined to buy from one of the larger organizations because, you know, it's more stable. I know it's going to be there. We're learning there. You know, they're stack, you know, we're learning all of the capabilities. And so it's easier for me to absorb something from one of those organizations. So if you are a kind of a young company or even an established company and you're trying to build in, you know, something that's, you know, you're just saying you're adding AI or you're trying to find one of these gaps, you've got to really think about it. But to me, it's always coming back to, what is it that you're trying to do? What are you trying to solve? Why is this useful? And, you know, to give you kind of a concrete example, you know, just in my current use case. So, you know, Zyde is a data company. We create data and source data and structure that data for a lot of organizations. One of our biggest use cases is where we take a lot of unstructured kind of web data and text type data and turn it into structured data, you know, for organizations, either in CSVs or, you know, JSON or XML kind of formats and so on. You know, we have been doing AI for years, you know, in our products. You know, we've been creating, you know, models that are trained on, you know, generating all sorts of different data types, from product type data to, you know, articles and, you know, job listings and various other types of categories. You know, we've loads of them that do all that. And so the traditional approach of building AI models was fine. You know, you create that, you train on a lot of data, you create the models and you do that. But one of the most common use cases that we would get are things like, well, you know, in certain situations, you know, you might have a schema of data that has, let's say, 10 or 20, you know, fields in that, and it's, you know, it's pre-trained data. You might just want something extra. So the you know, the space that you're in. So if you take some, you know, an example that everybody will get is, you know, product data. So, you know, there's obviously, you know, generic things about every type of product, you know, on the market that, you know, we would build into our standard schemas, you know, like the, you know, the description, the price, and, you know, various other kind of generic capabilities. But there are oftentimes in different industries, certain other attributes of a product that we wouldn't have in our default models. And so, you know, companies that would come to us in those industries are saying, well, we would like, you know, data, you know, these extra kind of attributes or extra capabilities. We're starting to look at using things like generative AI, you know, and the LLM approach to allow us to add that kind of augmented capability in. So in that case, coming back to that use case, we're not just using Gen AI, just because it's a really cool and thing at the moment. We're using it for a very specific use case to solve a very specific problem that our customers have, and we can weave that in, to our models and make it relevant and decide how we're going to bring that to market. And I think in every scenario that you go into in any industry, when you're thinking about adding this type of technology, you've got to also have that in mind. How is this useful, and what problem are you solving? It becomes more sustainable and so on after that.
Yeah, and I get it from your perspective and the company's perspective. Yep. You've been doing this a while, a lot of learns. But if we take it as a step back, where you now want to start to introduce AI to company, and you may not have actually worked in this field before, how yes. important is the data journey to this? Because, depending on who you talk to now, with generative AI, people are saying, well, actually, we're less concerned about getting the data fit for purpose and ready, and that AI can kind of help within that. And then other people are saying, well, actually, it's the same old. It's still, you need to get to have clean data. You need to be, you need a problem that you're actually going to be able to solve. And then you need to be able to actually start to bring that data, train it, and choose the correct model and go through that journey as well, which can take between 18 months to 2 years, depending on the company that you're working on. How do people start to feel comfortable with that process?
I think one of the things, if you're a company that is only in, let's say, traditional software development, and you're trying to introduce something like we've been talking about, AI, and of course AI is very broad, there's a lot of different elements to it, but the data question, I think it depends on what you're trying to do. And so yes, there are certain use cases where it's really, really important, that you've got, pre-trained data, you've got accurate data, and you want to have, a lot of good examples. So you will see in, for instance, healthcare, where if you're creating something that's trying to give you some advice on something related to, a healthcare use case, you're less open to the hallucination factor or inaccurate, data, from that model. So you obviously want to have a higher bar in the data, that you're using to train. You don't want it to just be, kind of a generic, this might be correct or it might not be correct. You want it to be pretty accurate. So you're going to have that, much higher bar to train your data on. And that would apply to other, regulatory markets and, financial services and other places as well. But when you're thinking about your team, you're going to have a multidisciplinary team. And for me, that's one of the things that's key to this. You can't just come into it and, with the traditional model, you're kind of at the intersection, if you like, of between software engineering, data science, the what's called, the ML ops, is in. You have to bring this stuff to life right now. It's not just some side project that's running on somebody's laptop. You're going to have to scale it up and you're going to have to run it. You do have some of the data engineering challenges, which is what we're kind of talking about now, about, you've got to get the right data in. And again, it has to be aligned and appropriate to your use case. So I know I'm being kind of pretty general here, but it kind of depends. But design is also an important part of this as well, about how do you surface this to your end customers and to your end users. And kind of where I'm going here with the data engineering question is, align it to what it is that you're trying to do, because if in my, kind of examples over the last number of years, I've been doing a lot of stuff in the text world, in the written language world. So it's, NLP and a lot of the kind of traditional, AI, ML use cases in that space. And so we're at the kind of the written word and so on. So it's not as structured as you would see if you're coming into a different example, maybe where you're using a lot more structured data. You're getting to a kind of a recommendation system, or you're getting to something that's going to create something very specific and very, kind of accurate in that regards to what you're trying to do. So I think you have to align it depending on what your use case is. There isn't just one answer. It depends. And that also depends on how you will go and train your data, because there's lots of different approaches. Won't get into like a huge amount of detail as you've covered in other podcasts, but the kind of supervised versus unsupervised training, all of those factors are going to be an element in you know, bringing some of these AI type products to market, which are going to be different than your traditional software, you know, only products. You know, you've got these other dimensions.
And then once you get the product, you know, into deployment and, you know, it's in production, a lot of people might be thinking, well, actually, you know, we can take a kind of sigh of relief, step away. But that's when the real challenges become, because there's this thing called drift, where things are actually, you think you're going to, it's going to go in this way, but it starts to change and you don't necessarily know how it's going to change. And if there isn't clear transparency in terms of how the models are put into play, it's very difficult to be able to explain that on a consistent factor. And if you're working in, let's say this product is financial services, there's certain regulations in place that you have to have that consistency in everything you do. Same with healthcare, and it has to be obviously very transparent. How does that add extra complexity from an engineering perspective and people who are actually trying to ship that product?
I think one of the big things is, even if we get to before you ship, the kind of the quality question, the QA question, because of the nature of whether it's a data product or whether it's an AI product, as we're discussing today, you nearly have to get comfortable with the fact that you can't test every scenario before you release. You know, it's not like, you know, that you have a fixed world that everything is going to be the same in your test world as it's going to be in your production world, because the data is going to be different. You know, the customer data is, you know, as you said, there's drift, there's other things, but it's the data, you know, that you're going to be operating on is very different in the production environment, and you can't always predict ahead of time what that's going to be, particularly if it's, you know, the written word or your, you know, documents or that type of data, or, you know, contracts or, you know, policy statements or, you know, warranties or other types of, you know, unstructured type data. You know, you don't know ahead of time necessarily what's going to be in those things. So you have to set yourself up in a way where, you know, I describe it as the feedback loop, you know, that you've constantly got to have feedback loops, both in the development cycles, but also in the production cycles, which you're trying to get to. And this brings in things like the data observability question, you know, and, you know, your team, you're going to have a team, whether you call it the, you know, product ops or, you know, some other type of a team that's observing what's actually going on in your data, in the sources, you know, creating those feedback loops to make sure that either you're not drifting too far from where you're trying to be, you know, that the accuracy of the data is correct, you know, if you're predicting things, that you're not getting, you know, things out of certain bounds that you might have to set ahead of time. But the whole kind of key question here is that it's not just create it, release, and then get back to, you know, looking at the next release. You've got this extra cycle, which is what's going on in production and how you set it up, and you've got to have that in your organization.
And then you've got the issue that obviously company, you know, privacy by design, that's how you're actually going to go and set things up. But then we've got the EU AI Act, which we expect in the next 2 years to be in place. We've got the similar ones getting created in the US, Singapore, UK, China. There's all this different regulation coming through. Now, suddenly a product or a service that has AI in it, if there's going to be fines on the back end of it being done incorrectly, these fines could be as high as 34% of revenue. Mm-hmm. Some are talking maybe 18% of revenue. Fines like that could wipe out a company. So getting this right or wrong is suddenly becomes one of the most important decisions that business will make. Yeah. So how important is it building that into the product from the start? So having the stakeholders involved, so either that's a chief AI officer, maybe that's someone from governance, whatever way you want to, then you've got an ethical consideration working within the values, because a product that can be sold in the US is probably going to be different than a product that can be sold in Europe, because there's no harmonization on that. So these are extra things that you now take into consideration that you didn't need to think about as much maybe 5 years.
Yeah, no, legal is something that you've got to get in early. You know, I say legal in its general sense, covering everything from, the general law and the regulations, you know, but you also have, you know, you have the ethical side of it, you've copyright, you've compliance, you've risk, you've all of these other dimensions. And, you know, so broadly in that kind of legal risk space, compliance space, you have to get that in early, because what you don't want to have is that you release something, you know, after, you know, into market, and then suddenly you realize, you know, you've got the the PII problem, personally identifiable information, and you're doing something where you're grabbing information that you're not supposed to, and you end up violating GDPR or some other regulation in a part of the world that you're operating in. But the same can apply, with copyright, like we see with a lot of the Gen AI firms. They're all now bumping into, the copyright question. And there's like, I'm not going to, pretend I'm a legal expert. I'm not. But, but there's so many different cases that are ongoing at the moment in this question. And, if you're an engineering team or a product team and you're building these things, you've got to be aware of it, so that either you're going in with your eyes open and you know what it is that you can and can't do. But you're certainly not going to be trained as a software engineer or a product expert in this stuff. Luckily, in my current company, we have, in Zeit, we have, a full legal team who are, we've hired people in who are experts in all of the jurisdictions around the world specifically, and they work from day one in the products to make sure that, we as a product, technology team, are living within the bounds of what we are and aren't allowed to do. And that's absolutely important in this world. Different industries have a different, there's a spectrum here, of course, but you've got to make sure that, that there's so much in this space. And even if you do create something that is, you might imagine is fairly straightforward, you've got to make sure that, you might have to put in things like explainability of, how did the model actually get to the answer? And so you need to understand, what it is that you have and what you should do and that and where the boundaries are. And it's so important, so important.
And we've been talking for the last 20 minutes or so about from the production perspective and, getting that, shipping that product. But companies, big and small, are now being asked the question, what is your AI strategy? And it may be that the CEO of the business says, we don't have an AI strategy. Well, you know what? You made that decision currently.
Yeah.
But if you're buying products or services off the shelf into your company that customers are using internally or externally, suddenly you've got a relationship with a machine that you didn't necessarily know about. And those relationships can be multifaceted as well. We've seen with some of the generative AI tools that people are using, they're taking sensitive data, they're putting them up on the system, and suddenly the question becomes, what's our AI policy from an internal perspective in terms of how our employees are actually using it? And when you've got people 3 days in the office, 2 days out, you can imagine how this kind of gets more complicated per department. This is a minefield that's kind of currently opened up, as you mentioned, with the legal cases. I'm particularly interested in Apple's approach because they've been kind of in the background, kind of watching and seeing while agreeing terms and conditions and privacy documents with some of these different kind of media outlets. So it's really interesting to see, will they come to the fore at the end of the year? We don't know, but it might be one of these where on the edge, on the phone, you're going to have more of the data going through, so it doesn't necessarily need to go onto the cloud. So I'm particularly interested in how that's going to play out. But whatever happens in the next 3 to 6 months, by the end of the year, you'll expect people to start feeling a lot more comfortable with AI that understands and has that personal feel, but by having the dance of how much data are we actually going to give away to get that kind of personalization too.
No, it's a very broad question. It's obviously way too much for us to discuss today, but I think the awareness of these challenges is really important. And I think if you kind of come back to, even when you're building products, one of the interesting things in this context that's actually quite interesting from an engineering team is, so you decided, yes, we're going to put in some AI, if you like, into the product, and you have your use case and you have a market opportunity. So let's sort it all that out. It's all great. Now you have to make a decision going, well, are you going to build it yourself? Are you going to use a third party? And how are you going to use that third party? So using something like OpenAI and their models, it's essentially kind of AI as a service. You're going to call an API, you're going to send them data, you're going to do that, but you're running it as a service as part of your business. And there are pros and cons to that. You can get up and running very quickly, but you're also, you're reliant on them as a service to provide you with some information. So if your business has service level agreements and so on, that might be a problem. The alternative is use some of the open source models. You build it in, you're hosting it in your own data centers, or on the cloud, and you have to build that. And again, there's pros and cons to doing that. We've been kind of doing both. Our bias is, we're bringing it in and we're using, more of the open source models and running it ourselves, so we've much more control over the environment. But I do have a good sized data science team, so we have the capability. But you need to know why you're doing one over the other. And sometimes it's to do with privacy reasons. Sometimes it's to do with how much you're going to share, whether that, you know, that other third party organization is going to, you know, reuse some of your data to train their future models. And that's obviously a challenge if, you know, in many use cases, or, you know, you take the, you know, the environment, I'm going to use a foundational model and I'm going to take a fine tune it, you know, nudge it in my direction, you know, train it on my data and so on. You know, there are different problems, but it all falls into this broad question about, you know, understanding AI and understanding, you know, what is kind of going on in your environment. You got to know.
And as we do this, it's early January. You know, Davos is happening. I saw CEO of Intel yesterday speaking about, well, generative AI last year was about that kind of research, some case studies coming through. But what they're expecting this year from all the main providers is that consistency. You know, the consistency, the errors, hallucinations dropped out, and then people feeling more comfortable, you can start to roll that out at scale rather than having some major issue that's going to happen within the business. Kevin, thank you very much for your time today. We could go on forever and ever on this subject. I really, really appreciate talking about AI, shipping it and deploying it and bringing a product to market.
Brilliant. Thanks, Mark.
I'm really, really excited to unveil my new book, AI Unleashed, Navigating the AI Revolution as a Business Executive, which is now accessible to purchase on Amazon and Amazon Kindle. This publication is the fruit of half a decade's worth of meticulous research and high-level conversations with experts in the field, both in Ireland and globally. The book is particularly timely, featuring current discussions on AI governance in the European Union and North America. If you're aiming to grasp the full scope of AI, ready your enterprise for its transformative power, and utilize it to your advantage, this book is specifically crafted for you. It serves as a pragmatic guide, clarifying misconceptions and presenting real-world insights for leaders entering the AI sphere. The book covers an extensive array of subjects, from AI's role in diverse industries to generative AI applications, and provides guidance on avoiding typical missteps in AI initiatives, all supported by the most recent studies. Additionally, the book highlights case studies and applications that have earned accolades at AI awards throughout the years and emphasizes top-notch AI utilization in Ireland. For executives, polyarchitects, or technology aficionados seeking to make sense of the intricate world of AI, AI Unleashed, Navigating AI Revolution is your essential handbook. So it's now available on Amazon. This book furnishes you with the expertise and instruments required to deploy AI more effectively and ethically.